Hey there, and welcome to the Techsplaining Show. I'm Victor. I'm replacing Rob's foot today.
Thanks, Victor. So welcome to Techsplaining here. I'm here. This is Mark, by the way. This is not Rob's foot. That sounds very different. But I'm here with Rob, Victor, Stephanie, and Brett, as always. So we are here together for the very first time. I think this is the first time we've all been in a room together.
Yes, it is. I mean, I think me and you and Stephanie did this last year, but it was just us because we were missing Brett. And now we can see Brett live in person, and wow.
So where was I? Was in the closet or something?
No, I think you were always there. But I think you were in England or having a baby or something like that.
Probably.
Yeah. No, I don't think you came to Ignite last year. And that was where we did it, on the beanbag chairs. Kind of we've upped our game now because we are in a legit recording studio today, which is really cool. We've got these fancy headsets and we don't have to look at each other on video.
I kind of prefer Rob on video.
But Rob's the only one with a beer.
I am.
That makes a change.
I am. Stephanie usually performs a master class on the beer.
No sour beer today. Yeah. Sorry.
Is it Miller Lite?
I don't know what it is. It was something at the MVP booth, and I walked past, and they just handed it to me, and I was like, oh, thanks. I needed that.
All right.
Yeah.
So we're here at Ignite.
Wow.
Day two.
What a, for some of us.
Yeah. I've been here a while.
Well, I guess it's day three for us because we were all in the MVP session.
Oh, and it's day four for her.
Oh, yeah, you were in the AdPoint session. Yeah. Yep. So what was that about? I want to know how I can get hooked up to that because the party sounded epic. You went to Epcot. I mean, what happened?
Yeah, so AdPoint has a group that we kind of get together, and it's for community support. We help each other out, and we are sharing ideas on not just, you know, product and marketing, and it's not all about AvPoint, it's about us too, and just kind of helping the community move forward. So that's what that was for. We spent the day together sharing ideas, figuring out maybe some things we can do together, projects you may see in the community here in the next year. So it was a lot of fun. Then we finished up the day with going to Epcot, which of course is a good time.
Yeah, which Epcot, which used to, as a kid, they didn't have many options for beverages, and now that's a whole thing there. I think they've realized that, hey, the kids that were there as kids now are grown up and bringing their kids, and they want to drink and eat good. So it's really kind of a thing now.
Well, it was the Food and Wine Festival.
Oh.
So that was fantastic.
Yeah, the last time I was there, I've never seen so many drunk adults in my life.
Are we talking about the Red Party?
No, this was at Disney with the Food and Wine Festival. It was crazy. It's just off the charts.
Fantastic.
Yeah, so day two, I guess, for Stephanie, day one for us, we did the Stephanie did a half day of the MVP pre-conference day. You were there.
I was there.
Yeah, and Brett was there for the first time, which
is
cool.
First time as an MVP.
Yeah, so we got a preview of a lot of the announcements that came out. Wow, what a great set of announcements they unveiled yesterday, huh?
It was nonstop. I mean, it's one after the other. It is really fantastic to hear and see the direction of Teams and SharePoint and OneDrive and all the other announcements they made. It's just, incredible. A lot of energy there.
Yeah, and what was great is they put Jeff Teper's session at the end of the day, his keynote at the end of the day, because we always run long. So they said, we're just going to give you the last session of the day. And Jeff said that we can bring out sleeping bags and just do demos all night. So it ran a little bit late, but it was perfect. Nobody moved. It was all a lot of great stuff. Stuff I'd never seen before. So they were holding a lot of stuff back for the keynote. And I was some really cool features were announced.
What was your favorite, since now that we're really looking at, we can talk about it publicly?
So a couple of things that stuck out to me were the connected web parts for the modern sites. Because, I mean, I use connected web parts all the time in Classic. It's one of those little used features because people just don't think to use them. And it's a great way to get web parts to communicate with each other, to create like filtered list views and that sort of thing. But now we've got connected web parts for modern sites, and so you can do things like they had a document library in the file viewer. So you can now select a file from a document library, and it'll pop it up in the file viewer instead of just linking that file viewer to one web part.
Well, that was always a bit odd, wasn't it? Is that what is that web part really for, to display a file on a page?
Right.
I didn't quite get it, but...
And the other thing I kind of liked is we talked about the column formatter before. And one of the complaints that everybody has about the column formatter is, well, I don't want to have to make that JSON object. Well, they started showing that they're starting to bake in some functionality into those column formatters so that you don't have to write any JSON at all. You can just specify some settings for a web part. They did a yes-no checkbox where all the yeses were green and all the noes were red, and you know, there was no code involved. So that was really cool. So those are the two things that really popped out at me at first.
I think that led nicely into the view designs as well. So not only can you do the column formatting, but the view designs are JSON. And I wonder if there's going to be some sort of designer in that in the future, whether that will head in the same direction. But yeah, those view designs that they showed look really, really cool.
You know, so we've just spent an absorbent amount of money creating a custom portal for my company, right? And it's got things like my frequent documents we integrate with the graph. It's got my frequent contacts, you know, my meetings that are upcoming and things like that. And one of the things that stuck out to me, at least in the SharePoint side of things, was this whole new, it's based on the community sites, but what was it called? The portal, right? Where they had the new intranet portal thing, right? You're looking at me like you don't remember this.
I don't remember that.
What was it called, Victor?
It was a portal.
Okay. Yeah, it was a portal. But it was, I mean, everything that we had to do, I mean, it's very similar to what we had to do. But it was all custom code, right? And we spent millions of dollars building this thing. And now it's 100% out of the box. There's really not much more that we're doing other than a little custom integrations, which you could do with the SharePoint framework, right, into things like show me my upcoming trips out of our travel portal that's not in SharePoint, and, you know, kind of integrations with our internal systems. I mean, it blew my socks off when I saw that.
Well, that brings up a great question that I kind of wanted to talk in the podcast about. With all these announcements, and we're seeing all these things that Microsoft is creating and the new features we're adding, and there are a lot of organizations spending a lot of money to create the functionality that gets rolled out by Microsoft at some point in the future, mm-hmm. or they're buying a product that is going to be out-of-the-box functionality in a year, 6 months. So as a company looking at utilizing SharePoint and building out your own portal, how do you decide at all these days that you're going to buy a product or that you're going to go with some sort of solution or build it yourself when it's something that may come out 6 months from now? How do you make that decision of this is something we're going to build or something we're going to wait and see if they come out with it?
So we started that journey about 3 years ago, right? So if you remember when SharePoint Online was about 3 years ago, it was not what SharePoint Online is today, right? For us, we knew we were at least 3 years out before this was happening. So we just decided, hey, let's go ahead and spend the money. Let's do this. Let's build it like that. And we did, and we launched about 18 months ago, right? So for us, we looked at the roadmap, just me having access into the product teams. My company works very closely with the product teams as well. So we understood the roadmap. So we said, well, do we spend the money now or do we wait 3 years before we can have what we want? So 3 years is a lot of time, right? And we really wanted to do something that would get us off of on-premises now, as well as build out our average, because a lot of this was skills building as well, right? So we wanted to start kind of putting Azure at the forefront of all of our custom development. So doing this, we put a lot of resources on it. We have a lot of people that have built and developed skills in rolling out Azure solutions now. So for us, it was kind of it paid off, but it paid off in other ways that those people are now distributed out working on other projects, all launching in Azure.
So what I've seen is that if you keep waiting for something to come out, it may come out, it may not come out, it may get delayed. You can't subject yourself, in my opinion, you can't subject yourself to that schedule. You just need to go, you need to move forward, you need to get it done, because best case, everyone starts adopting everything, you get things moving forward, and then you can adjust as things come in, as, you know, add them in as they're available. You know, whatever feature, work them in over time. I don't think you're ever going to regret an investment. That you know, all those product companies too, if you're integrating those, they're following the roadmap too. They all know it's coming. So they're doing things by best practices. So chances are you're going to be fine to implement the way you to move forward right away, and then you just deal with the rest later.
So yeah, as an ISV, I think the important thing here is we're not selling perpetual licenses anymore. We're selling subscription licenses. So there's nothing to stop you from getting a product into your environment, and you don't have to keep it for more than 12 months if you don't want to. So yeah, even if you see some of the functionality that you've got in the product being replaced, is no big deal, really.
But that's a great point.
I think also, Victor, this morning, so we were talking about, we were in Jeremy Thake's session, which was on Graph, and he was showing a lot of the improvements in Graph and so on, and you were up on stage. Is this the same sort of thing where, you know, you didn't quite have what you wanted in Graph, so you've effectively built your own Graph?
yeah, exactly. So I agree with what you guys are saying here. So when it comes to the modern SharePoint, that's what we're trying to be on board, of course, and trying to adopt everything there. And so much coming out of the box, and that's what I recommend my clients as well, as at least the first stage in that. But there are always situations where you have your custom data, right? There might be some way you store data in SharePoint or in other systems elsewhere. It might be in Graph, and you want to display it in a different way or work with the data in a different way than Microsoft will ever create these kind. They need to create generic web parts or generic functions. They cannot create your business solutions, so to say. So that's where we're using SharePoint Framework. We're using the Microsoft Graph to roll up certain information. And then it's also, yeah, Microsoft might build this web part in 6 months, but we need it now. So it's worth that investment. And as Rob said, we can't wait 3 years. You can't do that. Everything is moving so fast now. So certain cases, yes, we rebuild stuff, and then we throw it away if Microsoft builds something better.
The other thing you can consider is the phased approach, right? So let's say we have three things that we need, and they're all kind of equally important. How do we decide what to go, you know, what goes first? So maybe we know that item number two is coming in 6 months, so let's focus on one and three. Let's roll out number two when it gets here. So, you know, Satya in the keynote, he mentioned tech intensity, and it's about, you know, moving forward and picking the things that you really need to focus on so that you get the right impact to the business. That all kind of plays into that, you know, find your roadmap, figure out your phases, and strategically place your rollouts if you can, so that you can take advantage of those things when appropriate, right? So I think a little bit of planning goes a long way there too.
I absolutely agree. And what you alluded to, Brett, is what we talked about in the session this morning was what we created the Avanade graph. We're doing the same thing as Microsoft is doing. We're building, it's an incremental build for us. We're integrating system by system and doing the same thing there. But that's Microsoft's not going to create integrations to all our different payroll systems that we have in different niche countries, etc. But we need to do that integration. But we have the surface of SharePoint Online in this case, using the Office UI fabric, so it looks like it belongs in there, so it's native everything. And it just works on SharePoint mobile app and everything. We don't have to worry about that.
Good stuff. So speaking about Satya and the graph, I think one of the big announcements made during the keynote, Satya's keynote, was the fact that it sounds like SAP, Adobe, and Microsoft are getting together to create their own type of graph, right? So it sounds like they're creating some kind of unified API to reach into all those systems.
Formerly the Open Data Initiative.
The Open Data Initiative, yeah. So what do you guys have any thoughts on that and what that might look like?
Yeah, to be honest, I think it's more or less a handshake now. We're doing something here. I think it's an important initiative, but I would like to see where it goes and when it comes out, etc. It's a good idea that we can move data more fluent between different kind of systems and have a common model there. But yeah, show me something.
Yeah, I agree. When they were talking about, you know, silos and giving us silos, I'm thinking, well, SAP is like they got the biggest silo in the world. Like you can't get to your data in SAP. So this will be, it'll be huge if it happens. I mean, it'll be great.
I mean, as a BCS guy, I mean that immediately sort of sprung to my mind was all the BCS stuff that they've had in the past and still have to a certain extent. I just think it's not used as much across the board anymore. But yeah, there was experimentations with and I'll call it that because I didn't really see it take off. But with Duet and so on that was based upon business connectivity services. So there's been attempts before. So I think it'd be interesting to see how this pans out on. But then there's also been investment in connectors for all sorts of different platforms as well that we're seeing in Power Apps and Power BI and what have you. So, a common data model there would make a lot of sense for all the connectivity of these components.
Yeah, and we'll see a couple of these initiatives going on as well. I think, I don't recall the name of it, but Facebook and Google have the kind of offboarding APIs you can move between clouds as well. And I think that's a part of the cloud journey we're in now. Everyone is on board, but there needs to be some way to move the data back and forth between the clouds, I think, going forward.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't make me edit out a bunch of white noise. So here.
No, we got to make his job hard as possible so he can't just push publish and put it out. So we got to have some awkward pauses in there.
Yeah. I think really where we are in the announcements, I really believe that we are at a point now to where we've been through several years of this, right? We've been going through several iterations of releases and building out this base platform infrastructure. And I think now we're at the point of seeing the depth come in, right? So we've seen the breadth over the past 5 years, right? They've built out all of these different things, and they've done a good job of providing a great infrastructure. Now we're starting to build on top of all of those things that they've built. And what I'm seeing is amazing. Like I'm super like re-energized. I was talking to my wife about it today. You know, I'm super like re-energized about all this stuff. I mean, it's really blown me away that
I bet she couldn't wait to get you off the phone.
She was like, I've got to go.
Yeah, it's like you can actually talk to your wife about this stuff.
No. She was asking me how the conference was going, and I'm just really energized because you know when you're just in the grind all the time, right? It gets mundane, and you're like, gosh, I wish this would work. I'm waiting on labels. I'm waiting on this. Waiting on that. And now we're starting to see it actually come to fruition, and that's. It's just so exciting. You know, it just really is.
Well, what is something that really excites you then? I mean, give me something specific.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now, fucking Teams. While I'm editing. Yeah, so the Teams announcements, they went on about Teams is now officially the fastest growing business app in Microsoft's history. So it's really surpassed anything they've ever done. I think I'm looking at the numbers here, and it looks like 329,000 organizations are using Teams. There's 54 customers have 10,000 or more active users. 87 of the 100 Fortune 100 companies use Teams. I mean, it's massive. It's really, really taking off. I know Victor's a big Teams guy as well. I'm latching on to it. I mean, the things that we've kind of needed in Teams that we saw, like there's some cute things, right? So when you're having a Teams meeting and you're talking on video conference, you can do a black background blur, which would be awesome for our podcast, right? Because you can't see that we're all in closets or whatever. But things like that, things like recording of meetings, they're doing a lot of things like that where you can actually record meetings.
The translation.
Yeah, and when you record it, it saves it in through Stream, I believe, and then it does auto translations from your meetings so you can not only get to the re-recording or replay the meeting itself, but you can actually search the content of what people are saying, and that becomes indexed, and you can do that. You can also go into Stream, and if it doesn't understand, Mark and I, because we're Southern, and I'm sure it's going to mess up our words, you can go in and actually correct that. So you can have media people go in and actually correct those things. So things like that, I mean, it's...
And you can put Yammer in Teams now.
You can put Yammer in Teams. And, it's there's a Yammer tab coming in, which is going to be used by a lot of people.
So I was a little... when I first saw the Yammer tab bit, it was like, fine, I'm not excited about that. But then they started talking about putting... Then it led to the new Yammer Conversations web part, which was a big improvement on the previous web part. And then it was announced that you could put any web part on a tab in Teams. So that effectively how we're going to see Yammer in Teams? It's because you can put a web part in Teams. Is that the idea?
I think so. I mean, I think it's going to be that, but I think it's just, well, with that, and I think it's not only web parts, but it's also like pages as well. So you can have a full page application running as a tab in Teams. And I think that's going to open it up to where you don't have to really change your dev model or learn something new to actually develop applications for Teams. And I think that's a huge deal. And I'm going to give my headset to Victor or Stephanie, if you want, to really kind of expand on this. But, I mean, I think it really does open the door because, I mean, and I was telling Brad, as an ISV, right, you have to have, if you are in the collaboration tools market on Microsoft 365, which is the new brand for Office 365, all of it runs through, you have to have a strategy for Teams. Teams is where businesses are rolling out collaboration to. It uses SharePoint, and it used to be SharePoint. It's not SharePoint anymore.
No, for me, Teams is the client that I use. SharePoint is more that where we store the data.
It's a service, yeah, right? SharePoint's a service.
One of the services. Teams is also one of the services. It happens to have the best client right now, in my opinion, and where you can switch back and forth between the different teams and projects you're working on, etc., and where you can have that conversation going as well. What you mentioned about the Yammer tab there, hopefully they're doing using the same technology as we talked about the SharePoint Framework web parts in tabs, but they probably gonna pre-provision that kind of tab in your tenant. So I see huge opportunities there on how we as developers or developer community can actually build real applications and host them in Teams as well.
So
session this week on development in Teams too?
Yeah, thank you. So yeah, on Thursday, me and Larry Jin from Microsoft has a session on exactly this, how you put the SharePoint Framework web part in Microsoft Teams.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah.
So next year at this time, are we going to be talking about how to manage all of our teams and the scale that's happened over the past year? I think everybody's really excited. But what happens when we roll out a bunch of teams and groups and planner and SharePoint sites and all of that gets, you know, all the attention we're hoping it gets, then now we got to circle back and take control over all that stuff too. And that includes things like, you know, SharePoint Framework, web parts, and integrations into Teams. And we're not just talking what's out of the box, but also bots that we're adding and other features as well. And it's a lot to keep your arms around, I think.
Yeah. And probably the Teams team has to go through the same stories SharePoint team has done, mm-hmm. and managing and creating hub teams, I don't know what. So those kind of things, so we can get good governance and structure of them. And yeah, I know at Avanade, I'm probably a member of almost 200 teams.
Yeah, I am too. Yeah. As well. And we've got, we just crossed the 20,000 teams provisioned. We have over 20,000 teams, sites, or group, whatever they're called, provisioned in production. Mm. And that's a lot.
Do you have any retention policies on yet?
No.
We do that.
Yeah. Not yet. Yeah.
Every 6 months, I have to renew my team.
Oh, do you?
Teams.
Yeah. That should be a thing, right? Yeah. I mean, that should be a thing because it's just going to, you know, keep building and building. You know, it is. It's crazy. And what I do, I've done a lot of like intro to teams, kind of here's the lay of the land kind of discussions with our people. And I've probably presented to maybe 40,000 people over the last 6 months about this internally at my company. And one of the things that I find that they find most valuable is that activities feed. Right, so you have to go to the activities feed, and really, that's how you kind of manage it. Because I think you guys are smaller, right? So you probably have 8 teams or whatever that you can see, or you know, small. You don't have 200 teams you're looking at, right?
I have 50.
Yeah, you have 50.
Yeah.
So that's not bad. I mean, that's
and
still
six
a lot.
Tenants. Yeah. To switch between, right?
Yeah. But I mean, it really does get into a you know, it's really a management thing of just figuring out what's important for you, because you can't go through and read everything as things are changing and all that kind of stuff.
So how do you keep that organized? You know, you guys have 20,000, right? If you belong to 200 of those, how are you finding what you need?
I go to the activity feed, right?
That's it? That's all you do?
Well, that's really all I can do. Because, I mean, I have to really focus on when people are either replying to me, they've at-mentioned me, they're replying to a post that I've got, or they've edited, you know, a document or a post or whatever in what I've put out there. Otherwise, I mean, I can kind of scroll through every once in a while, but I can't keep up. If I can't go through and read every team.
So if you need a new post and you need to go find that team, then you're just putting in the search bar the name of the team to go out there?
If I need a new post and I need to find yes, I would search for it. Yeah, search for it. I know it's in this channel or it's in this team, and I can go search for it.
I was going to say, there's managing it from a user point of view. How do you manage all the conversations that you're part of and so on? But there's also some good announcements around the
search.
the search. And yeah, absolutely. That was huge. But we can talk about that in a moment. That is something we don't want to miss. But the being able to manage the teams as well. So now we've seen some improvements there, and I think there's some promises about helping with permissions. It was a small point made, but I thought it was big, that, again, this is a space that we're in, is what happens if somebody leaves the organization. Mm. There's not just SharePoint to worry about now. There's all the teams that they're a member of, and there's their OneDrives and so on. And it sounded like there was going to be a way through Windows 10 to basically remove a user, deprovision that user.
Well, and there was some other functionality there with dynamic groups and being able to manage team permissions with those Active Directory dynamic groups, which we've had that conversation with a customer. If you belong to 200 groups, right, and maybe 50 of those are kind of project-based, right, and you're role-based and you no longer need access or you leave the company, you're now being removed from all of those individually. Did you get everybody out or that person out of all of the teams? How do you manage all of that? Dynamic groups kind of goes back to that idea of having what we did in SharePoint was one Active Directory group added to a bunch of SharePoint sites. Same concept, right? So,
yeah, they added also a lot of things around the compliance, parse, etc., DLP policies. But getting the geek out of me, I think that what can actually make this whole governance process a whole lot easier is one of the APIs they released, what they call the Teams templates. Essentially,
dude, I was just looking at that too. That's
so you can provision a project team with those set of channels, those set of tabs. I want the planner up here. I want the OneNote and whatnot. I think that's going to make huge improvement when you have like 50 different projects you're working on and they look the similar. Then it's easier for you to find and get back to work.
That's huge. I mean, that's huge. I mean, it really is a that was a huge announcement in the keynote, the Teams keynote, because that's something that we've been looking for as well. Because we want our, you know, let's just say we have a project of whatever. It's a consulting project, and we know that we have we want to have our same layout for channels. You might have people working across projects. It just makes sense to have that layout, something that they're familiar with, and it really is going to help us drive adoption by driving consistency on how teams are provisioned. Now, once it's provisioned, you can add channels from there or whatever, but it'll give you that base that you can start with and everybody's familiar with.
Yeah, we have one client now. We're using an RPA solution to actually click out those teams to make them look similar. And this makes it less error-prone and everything. And just think about hooking it up to a SharePoint site design, site templates, and a flow kicking off that. And automatically, when you create the project team site, that will create the project team for you with those set of folders, et cetera, that you need. I think you can make so really, really great solutions out of this with essentially out-of-the-box features.
Well, and having that consistency is now going to help. We've got this enterprise search that was announced, and that's I would assume that would give us, okay, now I know how to go search for something because it should be consistent across those sites. So who wants to talk about the new search?
Microsoft Search. Wow. What a thing.
I can start from an experience point of view. We've been using Bing for Business for quite some time in Avanade. I think it's I've been using Bing for the last 10 years. It's bought me a lot of Xbox subscriptions and stuff from that. So, but I really like Bing. And
how do you buy Xbox subscriptions from Bing?
Yeah, if you search a lot, you get credits and you can get subscriptions for that.
What?
So I'm safe until 2022 or something like that.
Wow,
that is great. That's not only the only great thing about Bing, but we've been using Bing for Business, and we can actually get. I can search in Bing and get corporate results in the same way I do when I normally search. But also, I can actually search in both Teams and Yammer in Bing for Business.
Well, now that's that. The thing that they announced though is beyond Bing. It's Bing for Business, but you just get it
exactly. Bing for Business is going. It's being a part of the new whole Microsoft Search, where you will see everywhere.
And I think it's pervasive through like Bing. They said Bing. If you log into Bing with, if you sign into that with your credentials you use for your tenant, you can search for stuff on the web, and there's also another tab that will show you stuff results from your tenant, which includes stuff from SharePoint, Teams, Yammer for the first time, thank God, there was other things, right? Emails, right?
Directory, calendar, whatnot.
Yeah,
but the whole idea, there's one search. You get same search results everywhere.
Yeah.
Whether you're in SharePoint, you're in Word, you're in Bing, or even Cortana.
Some of the new Office, like Microsoft Search making its way into Office, I think is phenomenal.
That looked really impressive where you might be in PowerPoint and you're looking for a particular PowerPoint slide. You're not necessarily having to go out to the to Windows to do that. You can do it from within PowerPoint, and it's searching that content. But also, other people that have app mentions and things like that, perhaps in slide decks and so on, can also be searched.
That shocked me, right? Because now, I don't know if it was a little thing. I don't mean to.
Rob's getting excited.
That shocked me. One of the things they announced, they didn't say it. They did it in the demo. They didn't say it. Is that you can be in a Word document or a PowerPoint file or whatever, and you can app mention somebody in there, and they'll get a notification about that.
In access.
In what?
And they'll grant granted access.
Yes, and they'll be not only they'll give it'll say if they don't have Mark just said and they'll be granted access, but if they don't have access, it'll tell you that they don't have access. Hey, I just mentioned Victor, so Victor doesn't have access. Do you want to grant him access to that? But that's in line with a document, not in line with a conversation. That's in line with something you're creating and you're collaborating around. Huge. We actually had that. One of our people asked us that last week. They were like, "Can you do that?" And I was like, "I don't know." But I saw it and I was like, "Oh my gosh, this is great! Perfect timing. I can come back and say coming soon."
So what all this reminds me of, though, is that request for, I want to index my file share and have all my results in SharePoint. And you remember what happened with that?
It was no bueno.
It surfaced everything.
Yeah.
And people could actually find things a little too easily, because previously they were buried in all these different places, and it was really difficult to find something that was supposed to be secure. So it just ended up, security by obscurity. And then when you index the file share and you surface it all in SharePoint, they would say, oh, yeah, we want this. And then we'd do it. And they'd be like, no, turn it off. We're finding too much.
Well, I wonder if that's
so this kind of reminds me of all of this. Like, once it's all really easy to find, all those permissions are going to have to get cranked down again. And when you have something like Word that's, I'm just going to add this person in here, should they have been added? Are there approval processes in there to make sure that we're, is it item level security? Is it adding them to the whole team? Do they realize they're adding them to the whole team? Like, I want to know how all that works, because it reminds me of that time where we're going through file shares and surfacing a little too much. That's going to make some people nervous.
But what they showed in one of the demos was the expiration of the permission grant as well.
Yes.
So that would be cool if that is included in that one. So I want to give Mark 7 days. You can work on this document. Then.
Yeah.
Then you're fine.
Yeah, I think that was the search thing. How do you think that surfacing, because it's typically people aren't like you, right, Victor? They're not like you. How do you think surfacing, when a risk person in an organization like mine sees corporate search results through the public online Bing browser.
Yeah, and I would say our legal has been very much involved in our Bing for Business journey.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So and that's why we very slowly rolled it out to control all of that. And I would say we are extremely risk averse as well, given our heritage from Accenture, etc. So yes, there is a risk, but still potentially. But our legal has approved it, so then it's risk-free, within quotes, I would say. No, but that's a part of the journey here. And you sign in with your corp identity. If you have MFA, you have to do that kind of stuff. And also, that's one of the features that are removed from Bing. If you remember, you could actually sign in both with the corporate account and consumer account into Bing previously. Now you have to choose. So you can't have both, which, unfortunately, if you're using your consumer account, you lose all your history and those kind of things. But that's to mitigate one of those risks that might be.
Well, and for that to be successful, I think we're also going to need to see some pretty solid documentation from Microsoft on the security behind that. I mean, we ran into issues just trying to roll out Delve because executives were finding emails in Delve and being very nervous, like, my information's available in search, and they weren't comfortable with it because they didn't understand the security behind it. It's security trimmed, but they still didn't want to see it showing up in Delve and in the graph and all of that. And we had initially, early on, requests, let's just turn graph off. Well, we know that was a bad idea. Mm. But I see a very similar conversation.
Absolutely.
Happening.
And what we initially did was as well, we only allowed North America due to the data residency where data was stored. And that's what you can do with the Bing part of it. This is only group that actually can use Bing.
But I still don't have my custom refiners.
Yeah. Sorry.
Where would you put those, though, in the search bar?
I just want my custom refiners. I want to be able to find...
There are a couple of good search sessions. You actually should go and ask the team what they think about the search extensibility, because they are working on things there.
Okay. Because I'm sad right now.
I got what I wanted, though.
Finally, what?
We have the modern pages on the Roots site collection. We're finally able to do the modern sites. I'm so excited. That's like the one thing I wanted to hear at Ignite. So at least we have that.
That is big. It's really big.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
So one of the other things, Hub Sites without PowerShell, I think that was a big thing, right?
That was pretty massive.
So now from the account
So from the admin center, you can now see all of your hub sites. You can see all the sites associated with the hub site.
And you can associate sites with a hub site.
Then directly from the admin center, you can associate sites with a sub site. You can turn a site into a hub site. You can change the security policy on any of those sites really easily.
One of the things that I found really applicable to us is that the hub site and then the, you know, kind of container site, whatever. What do you call the sub site in a hub site?
The associated sites.
Associated sites. That's what you call it, right? And associated sites can be in a different geo location, right? So and it didn't matter. You could just search for that, and it could be like if we had our hub site in the U.S. and we had different geographies set up for other sites, it didn't matter where those were. They could still be associated with that hub site.
When's that available?
They showed it, so I don't know if they haven't announced the availability. Yeah, that's a great question because there's some confusion on that. They have not announced the availability of multi-geo SharePoint, and I just talked to the product owner of the multi-geo stuff just now, and he's going to announce the date tomorrow, but they're looking at Q2 2019. He didn't say that, but it's coming later.
So I think there's some other improvements as well with hub sites and associated sites, and one of them was the approval process. So you could of course create a hub site using PowerShell before. Now we could just specify a hub site, but when you associate a site with a hub site, that just happened, and now it requires approval. So that I think was a huge announcement, and other improvements are about roll-up. So you could roll up news before, but now we've got the ability to roll up events and things through associated sites. So.
And don't forget the mega navigation.
Oh, mega nav, yeah.
Mega menus.
Mega menu, yeah.
Yeah, they were cool.
So we have people asking for that all the time, and it looks like, you know, now we're going to have a really good mega navigation option. Mm-hmm. So
yeah, throw it down to three levels, right? So it's down to three. That's all you need, you know, without it getting too complex. I thought that was a good – I liked it.
I liked it too.
That's one of those things we developed again. We developed that, and we've got the management around that. Now it's out of the box.
I think the cool thing with that, it's a good enough solution. We can be in super complex mega menus and whatnot, but I think that's good enough for the vast majority of companies.
Well,
but
and it's also going to help us too when we go to those clients who have like really complicated requests, and you say, well, we can give you this out of the box, or we can spend this much money to customize it, and they're going to say, "No, let's." It'll help keep them under control too. I love those types of features.
Yeah, but I think when it comes to the menu and the header in those sites, what excited me most about what they showed there was the different ways you could actually have sizes of the header. You know, the header in modern SharePoint sites are quite big, and if you want to have a starter or portal page, you probably don't want a big header on top. So you can make it much more compact now. I think you had four different sizes of it. I think that's a big thing. It's a small thing, but it's actually, when you talk to a client and they want this is the design we want, then we can actually reduce that header so it doesn't have that big impact on the page.
Yeah, with the new personalization web parts, the stuff for the header, the stuff for the footer now, the quick links part.
It's an out-of-the-box footer now. You don't have to use SharePoint Framework to build one.
Exactly. So it's just all these features that people have been building forever, now they're just there for you to start using.
Don't forget the countdown timer web
part. Oh.
You could like set it to count down to the general availability date of the geo stuff, right?
Whenever that is.
Every day
hopefully
you can see
rolling,
it going down.
It's a rolling counter.
It auto extends.
Now we have the weather web part, the countdown web part, and the Kindle web part. What else do we need?
If we've got the Kindle web part, you really don't need anything else.
I thought that was cool. So I just set in on a session, pretty decent, like a little expo out in the hall session. A lot of people there. The speaker was building bots in 5 minutes. It was cool, and I thought it was awesome.
I thought he was kind of a jerk. I don't know. He was.
I brought my underwear, though. It was kind of funny.
Yeah, thanks. So I appreciate
that. You might want to tell the story on that.
Yeah, so there's apparently one of the sponsors here. Was it
Fruit of the Loom?
Fruit of the Loom is a sponsor here, and they have a mannequin wearing underwear.
Well, it's only like the crotch part of the mannequin.
Yes. So Rob was sure to hold that up during my session while I was speaking to try to distract me. So.
It's a woman's underwear, though. It was nice.
I wasn't paying attention to you. I'm sorry.
You totally saw it. I saw you laugh. you did laugh.
So my session. Yeah, so I was doing a session on using the Q&A maker to create a knowledge base chatbot in Teams. And it turns out that this is something that's ridiculously easy to do. It actually took them a while to get my session assigned to me here for Ignite because they weren't sure what to do with me. And let's face it, most people aren't.
And like they asked me like a week and a half ago, we want you to do a bot. And I'm like, I've never created a bot before. This is okay. I'll do it though. And I went through the process of creating this Q&A bot, and it like takes zero code. It's all configuration, and it takes like 5 minutes. And I was like, oh, that's it? Why have I not been using this forever? And one of the things, cool things about this question and answer bot is there is this, you can go to the qnamaker.ai, and this is an Azure services bot running using the cognitive services. And you can go in there and easily create a chat bot that will respond to users' questions. And you can enter question answer pairs if you want to. But one of the great features you can do is you can actually point this Q&A maker at a FAQ for your website. And it, since it's using the cognitive services, it will parse that FAQ, and it will determine questions and answers from just your standard FAQ page. And so now, instead of users having to go to the FAQ and do the right search for the right keywords to find what they're looking for, they can now ask a chatbot in Teams, what's our vacation policy? And then it will be able to interpret their intent and return the answer for what the vacation policy was from the FAQ.
Well, and it does things, it uses AI, right, to determine, so like you might ask, what's our vacation policy? I might come in and say, I need a vacation,
right?
You know, or whatever. And it's actually so good that it can determine that, hey, Rob and Mark are asking the same question in different ways, and here's the answer. And I think that's an amazing thing.
Yeah. Deny Rubs.
Right?
Deny Rubs.
Deny Rubs.
Yeah. And they've got these chit-chat bots you can integrate now, so you can automatically give your bot a personality. So it's like professional, friend, and comic, I think. And like you, if you select one of these, it presets a ton of responses based upon like, how are you? Like, oh, you're awesome. And it'll respond back and you know, with some sort of personality.
So that's something new. I haven't actually seen that yet.
I didn't see it until this morning when I was doing
my run-through. That's what you were talking to me about. No, so that's something that I think is massive because we do a lot of bots at work and stuff. And we do, one of our bots is called Delaney. And Delaney has a personality like Alexa or Siri. And she talks to you in a certain way and a certain phrasing and stuff. And I think it's cool that they start out with that. You can start your bot out as being a comic bot or a, you know, professional bot or whatever. So that helps you really, because the success of bots isn't getting people to use them. I mean, I don't use Siri. I use Siri because it's an experience, right? I use Alexa because it's an experience. I want people to use Delaney because it's an experience. I want her to have a one voice, right? Because what we're doing is we're creating a bot and we're building different skills off that bot. One of those skills is actually a Q&A maker knowledge base, right? To say, what are you doing? Boom, I need to ask questions about this, and it's Q&A maker. It could also be something that says, I need help entering my time in my timesheet, and it would actually integrate with that application. But the experience, the voicing is the same, and it's all started around that personality, which the Q&A maker now helps you really build that base up.
Yeah, and then you can edit it too. So you can go in there and edit the questions, and you can give it your own, you can change the responses, and you can add more questions. So you can totally change the personality too.
Yeah. But it gives you that base of stuff, because you're always thinking, okay, I want... We actually, when we launched our bot, we put some like jokes or Easter eggs in there, right, to make it more interesting. Like, you know, what is, you know, tell me a joke or whatever, and it would tell you a joke. And so things like that, and, you know.
What's interesting, though, is that this, you know, this is helping people find information more quickly, right, at the core, right, so they don't have to go hunting for things. And I've struggled with this because I have kids, and my kids use Siri. You know, hey, Siri, you know, what's the capital of Ohio, right? Is that cheating on their homework, or is that really, that's a method of research now, right? So they would have to go search for it on the internet or, you know, look it up somewhere in their book. But that's kind of the future, right? So I think it's interesting that we're kind of taking the business that way, and it's kind of helping me mold how I view my kids' use of some of that technology, because they actually, they need to know how to research that way too.
Yeah, no, yeah. That's right. And I think using your kids as test harnesses for your bots as well is a great experience. I do that often. I'm like, hey, you know, Andrew, can you please sit down here? I would never let Will do it. but can you sit down and just try to use this bot and see what, just sit him down and go, hey, it's, you need to ask it questions about whatever topic. And then he'll sit down and do it. And if he can use it easily, I've got a winner.
Yeah, for them, it's natural to work that way. Mm-hmm. We use Alexa at home, even though it only works in Alexa. My kids, they speak a little bit English. So
Alexa is only English?
Yes, it's only English.
What?
Yeah, but they speak English with her, and it makes sense.
And
it works for them.
English, too.
Yeah, exactly.
That's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, but that's the way going forward, and we discussed that a couple of times. So we discussed a lot of SharePoint in here. So SharePoint Teams, those are two panes of glass, and that's the third pane of glass, and that's in bot interaction. It might be voice or text or whatever, or clicking. So, and I see that's where Microsoft is going, to having multiple panes. You see, even Office now, we have search. So I think that's where we're going. You get your stuff done where you need to do the work, so to say. You don't have to move and switch context and all that kind of stuff.
Is that
going to
fill the generational gap? We have such a big gap right now with those that are struggling with the technology, right? Yeah. But they can go and talk to, you know, Siri or Alexa. Yeah. Or.
But that's why we have to offer these different panes of glass as well. If you prefer to only work with voice, then do that. If you want to still work only in SharePoint, do that. Or in your inbox. You still have the access to the same information.
Well, I think the bots are finally starting to come into their own. People have been talking about bots for a while now, and to make them was maybe not, you know, it was like, what, give me a really good reason to use them. But I think they're starting to proof those out and say, like, no, this is how easy it is to get started. There's really, it's really a absolute no-brainer to start using a Q&A bot today in your organization if you're in Teams. I mean,
well, if you're anywhere, right? Because that's the thing about the bot framework they built is that when you build a bot, the bot is an engine, right? An engine is it could be anything. I mean, it could be anything. What they've done is they've given us channels to deploy this bot through, which are those panes of glass, right? If you want the bot available in Teams, or if you want the bot to be available on a web page, like you had as the test harness, right? All of those are just exposing different channels, and what it does, the bot framework creates these endpoints that Teams can use or your web page can use or whatever. And then once you do that, it's seamless, right? There's no, like, you don't have to develop a Teams bot and a web bot. You develop the engine, and then you expose channels to that, and it's point and click.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And back to your Q&A bot. I think, as you said, a Q&A bot is a very good way to start. But you also can integrate that Q&A bot into your other bots. Because you get when you use that service, you get the value back between 0 and 1. How it actually gets the answer from it, how correct it is. So if it's beyond or above a certain threshold, you can channel out to other bots. You can have multiple Q&A bots.
No, that's the thing is you shouldn't develop a one bot does all
absolutely.
Thing, right? We've looked at it like the way you do Alexa. I mean, we totally ripped off their skills. Model is that you develop skills for the bot. One of those skills might be a knowledge base for Q&A maker. Yeah. Another one might be an engine for entering time or expense reports or whatever, whatever you'd be. Well,
so that kind of brings up, and I know we're running short on time, so I'll keep this story short, but one of my favorite demos from the keynote yesterday was when CJ came on the stage. I think her name was CJ. And she had a site set up where you're supposed to upload pictures of featured cupcakes. And
oh my god,
I know, right? And so she uploaded a picture of muffins. It wasn't cupcakes. There was a flow attached to that document library in SharePoint that ran AI to see what is the probability that there is a cupcake in this picture. And if the probability was too low, it would email the person automatically and said, your picture didn't have any cupcakes. Please upload one with cupcakes. And it worked, and it was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, it's Microsoft Vision, right? Is that the Vision API, I think, is what they did.
Yeah, it's a Vision API in the machine learning, custom machine learning
model. Yeah.
I think a question that might be on a few listeners' minds as well is about SharePoint 2019. And there wasn't what surprised me was the fact that there's been, I know, it's a boring subject, right?
But everybody's thumbs down, yawning. Yeah.
But this is where I'm going with it, is so little time has been dedicated to that it's becoming obvious that Microsoft don't want us to be there. They have built this SharePoint 2019. It's going to have the modern experience, but it got, like, 3 minutes of time.
You know, I wonder, so now that multi-geo is going to be a real thing, I mean, it's going to be a real thing. It's coming eventually, and it will be there. I'm not sure that on-premises SharePoint is relevant anymore. No. Once that hits, other than customizations, and Mark's squinting at me, other than customizations, if you wanted to do customizations, I just don't see the relevance for it.
There are small edge cases, I would say. Customizations for legacy, you need to keep them for a certain time until you sunset them or whatever. There might be some legal reasons that you need to keep and cuddle with your servers.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like, I kind of picture it to, like, you know, for people from the South, a church. Who controls the church? The old people.
That's right.
When you want to make a change, what has to happen? The old people have to die off first. So I see it being the same thing with on-premises Lord. SharePoint, right? But as soon as the old guard kind of move on, it's going to take a while, but that's there's going to be people who are just not going to want to go.
Well, this is what I heard was, we should talk about SharePoint 2019. You're going to get the modern experience, and it's going to be there. Here's a new migration tool, and we are dedicated to helping you go to the cloud.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's coming. Its lifespan is going to be limited, I would say. It's just with data residency being solved, with a lot of the customizations you can do, maybe they might not migrate, but I think they can. You know, there are answers being made available in the cloud for a lot of things that you had to custom dev before.
There's some scenarios such if you're an oil rig, for instance, don't have internet connectivity in those kind of cases, where you might need to keep a smaller setup of a SharePoint server. But yes.
Yeah, space station. Yeah. So whatever. Yeah.
Do they have SharePoint server on space station?
I think they might.
Well, yeah. No, it's still in orbit. So.
Yeah.
Sorry.
That's true cloud.
Is that my outlook?
Yeah, that's real cloud, for reals. Not on premises, we're cloud.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess we are running close on short on time. We got 5 minutes. So what do you guys think? I know, Stephanie, I wanted to talk to you about your hugely popular diversity session. How's the diversity track going, by the way? Is it? I know you went to a session today. Was it?
I did go to part of a session today. I did
also
the
really good, huh?
Yeah. No, it was more of a timing thing with having to get ready for this evening. Yeah. So the struggle here is that I've spent so much time in meetings and vendors and in networking that staying for sessions has been a challenge. So I am eager to see the recordings come out. I think we were all supposed to be live, and then something happened, and the sessions weren't totally live. So kind of waiting to see what happens there. But no, the diversity track has, it's interesting, right? It's new, and it's something that I don't think a lot of people really understand. I've had a couple people now say, well, who's your target for diversity sessions? It's really everyone, and I just think that everybody should be learning about this stuff, but it's not something that everyone's real comfortable with yet, and they don't understand why they need to be there, right? And diversity is important because, your services are better, your products are better. In general, you have a better company with different perspectives, and so that's why it's here. So first year for it, is always rough for any time you're trying to do something new and launch something that's a little different and something that people maybe don't have a full understanding for yet. So so I speak tomorrow in the diversity track on my experience with business ownership and my perspective on the tech industry as a female. So it'll be interesting to see if anyone shows up after all the parties tonight.
Yeah, it's going
to
be a big night.
Who's able to get out of bed tomorrow morning.
It's a big, big night. What time's your session tomorrow?
It's at 10:10.
10:10. Yep. That sounds good. Like I could sleep in and still make that, actually.
Yep.
Yeah, so thanks for joining us, Victor. It was great to have you. I appreciate you being here and adding some credibility to these boneheads. I mean, adding your opinion. And as always, for Rob, Stephanie, and Brett, I'm Mark. If you want to email us, contact us at info@techsplaining.net. We'd be happy to answer your questions or maybe even do a show for you if you have an idea. And we will see you next time.